Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman. Thanks for joining us. And joining me to co-host today is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family Radio. Fred, how you doing, brother?
I made it in. The rowboat. Yeah. Got the rowboat out. And yeah, we made it.
We have a situation in the in
we
the
got
south.
We got us a situation.
Well, at least in the this flooding is going to affect three or four states at least.
Mississippi, Alabama,
Georgia,
Tennessee, and probably Georgia. Maybe other places. Other places is going to be a winter storm. What we're experiencing here is a soaking. We're expecting 8 inches of rain in Tupelo, mm-hmm. in our area over the next
up till about Saturday.
Saturday, mm-hmm. But the eastern seaboard is going to be slammed with what?
Well, Washington shut down today with snow.
Oh, so sad to hear.
One day they can't do any damage.
That's right.
So sorry. You think government employees care if there's a snow day? I think they're glad to
they
have
get
one.
Paid. Huh? They get paid.
As glad as I am. I like
snow days. Snow days? Did you like snow days when you grew up in New England?
Oh, I loved them.
How do you get a snow day in New England since you guys got so much snow?
Well, let me tell you, and Fred probably testified the same thing. I've said on the air before, I used to gamble when they were predicting a snowstorm and not do my homework. And here was the thing. If I went to bed
right,
hoping for a snow day and I heard the plows before midnight,
right,
I was cooked. But if the plows didn't get out until 2 in the morning,
right,
it was probably going to be a snow day.
Okay.
Because those plows get out and they get all those roads clear, you're done for. And yeah, there were many a day that I was scribbling my homework on the bus right, on the way to school, even in high school. Man, right, what'd you get for nothing? Because I didn't do my homework.
True confession.
Hey, yep. Does it snow as much in your home area of Nova Scotia, Canada, as it does in New England, or does not
probably
so much?
More.
It all depends on how those systems go. It can snow in New England. Here's how weird it is. It can snow in New England, but if that low pressure system continues to move north, then, you know, areas like Halifax, Nova Scotia, where I used to live in Sydney, would get it in rain. Mm. Because the south side of the low pressure system picks up the moisture from the Gulf Stream and it gets dumped on rain. It's really strange.
Yeah.
If that system moves to the south of the Bay of Fundy, there, that which runs between Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, if it moves south of there and you get the north side of the storm, then you get it all in snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, there's your weather report. Next up, sports.
Sports. Okay. And a partial score, UCLA 10.
All right, Fred, what's happening?
Well, we all know by now, Andrew McCabe, the former deputy director of the FBI, no longer with them, is out peddling a book. And he's been giving numerous interviews, the first with 60 Minutes of CBS, on Sunday night, where he basically, among other things, says that the current deputy AG, Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, was serious about, for instance, wearing a wire to get bad information on the president when he would go visit the president. Well, this morning on Sandy Rios' program, Sandy spoke with Hans von Spakovsky, who is with the Heritage Foundation, formerly with the Justice Department. And Sandy asked Hans von Spakovsky, so what do you think of this? What do you think of McCabe out there right now telling these stories about, hey, we're going to maybe use the 25th Amendment, declare the president mentally unfit, wearing wires to go wiretap basically the president? Hans von Spakovsky was asked about McCabe's comments. Cut number 9.
It makes me think of one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite John Wayne movies, Fort Apache in 1948, in which there's a line where they're talking about this dishonest Indian trader, a traitor, and they call him a blackguard, a liar, a hypocrite, and a stench in the nostrils of honest men. And that's what I think of Andrew McCabe. First of all, everyone needs to recall, the Inspector General of the Department of Justice said that he committed perjury, that he lied about leaking information about internal FBI investigation to the press, and then when the IG investigators asked him about it, he lied to them. So that's the first part of this. The second part of this is, if what he says is true, it shows not only how corrupt he is, but how totally unqualified he was to be the number two at the FBI.
There you have it, Hans von Spakovsky speaking about Andrew McCabe and what he's saying out there and peddling his book about how he basically, as I say, he says Rosenstein denies this, McCabe says Rosenstein was serious about wearing a wiretap. The Gwynne listened to the president wearing a wire to get dirt on the time to get dirt on the president. And McCabe says there were serious discussions about using the 25th Amendment. Hans von Spakovsky. That's what he has to think about.
And it's one of the world's great names, by the way. Hans von Spakovsky.
Yeah, you have to rehearse that. You
know, that's right out of a science fiction movie.
His Fifth Symphony is amazing. I don't know if you've ever heard it or not.
I mean, that's the name of a spy.
Hey, I met him Saturday.
Thriller. Oh, did you really?
For the first time, yeah. I met him at a conference.
He's a very smart guy.
Extremely. So I had forgotten about that, about Andrew McCabe, that the inspector general who researched and investigated this whole matter inside the FBI/Justice Department said that he lied.
Yep.
About.
Well, there were lies told about how things got leaked.
Gotcha.
To the Washington Post, New York Times.
You know, these guys, we talked about this a lot, but these guys are at the players in this move to prevent President Trump from becoming president and then trying to take him out after he was elected. They're getting pretty open about this stuff. McKay doing a book tour talking about all this, and who else? Comey. Mm-hmm. Comey was trying to take President Trump down. Right, James
yeah.
Comey. They thought this was their righteous mission.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The other two people, Peter Strzok,
Lisa Page,
they're the top FBI officials, agents, and they. By the way, I read something a few months ago that struck me. They said, you know, usually investigations are left to field agents in the FBI, seasoned veteran field agents. And they were saying with President Trump, this was orchestrated at the very, at really, what would you call it, administrative levels, you know, like director and assistant director, people who don't go out in the field and
right.
So this cabal, is that what you want to call them? What does that mean exactly?
Well, a cabal would be a kind of a secretive group of people that are trying to accomplish something.
Right. Well, now it's not so secretive. There were about 5-6 of these people that were in. They thought it was their job as patriotic Americans to take out President Trump because he was dangerous.
That's why I hope William Barr now has he been voted?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So I think he ought to.
Confirmed.
Confirmed. So I think he should look into this.
Mm-hmm.
He ought to DOJ resources mm-hmm. and begin to look into this, and perhaps have the FBI do this and perhaps file charges.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're listening to today. We'll see what happens with all this. But you're listening to Today's Issues. And by the way, I failed to mention earlier that if you want to watch this here show, as Ed would say, you need to go to Facebook or YouTube, and you can watch our show live for your video streaming from our studios. And you can also access the stories that we talk about here on this show by going to the Facebook page and interact with other folks who listen to Today's Issues here on AFR. By the way, Abraham Hamilton III will be with us at the bottom of the hour as he joins us every Wednesday. And then Phil Robertson from Duck Dynasty fame will be joining us at 11:45. He's got a
10:45.
Pardon
Central.
Me. Pardon me. 10:45 Central, as he's got a new book out.
And apparently, it looks like he's got an additional 6 inches on his beard.
On his beard, yeah, the beard's grown since the show went off the air, I think. Yeah, I wonder if they ever trim their beards, the guys there.
Well, you could ask him. I'm sure he's been asked before.
All right. I've had a beard a couple times in my life. You?
I can't grow one like that. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe my whole life.
Well, you got a little goatee. You got the goatee thing going on.
A little goatee
right?
thing. It gets a little longer, and it gets really scraggly.
Yeah, you try to eat spaghetti when it gets longer, huh?
Not good.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. It is.
That's good.
All right, Fred.
Especially if you don't know the
Fred, you're clean
the food is there.
But other people know.
And other people.
I'm trying to imagine you with a beard, Fred. Have you ever had a beard?
No, the longest I've had on facial hair was when I was in the military, and we had to go out, and we were in the woods for several days.
Well, that's what Duck Dynasty does. They go to the woods.
Go to the woods.
Did you get any pictures of that? I'd pay to see that.
Is that right?
You and a beard.
Yeah, well, that came off very quickly as soon as we got back to base. Because I couldn't stand it. It just felt dirty and everything.
I just have a conviction in my heart that I need to shave once a week.
Once a week. So,
week. Sunday nights are my shaving night, whether I need it or not. It's a personal conviction of mine. The old timers, though, and by old timers, I mean people who are older than me, probably. You do get the looks if you don't. You know, if you go to a public event or something.
And you're not shaved?
And you're not
clean. I don't think I've ever seen Fred.
Yeah. Not clean shaven.
Not clean
shaven.
Well,
Fred would be one of those old timers who would look at me at a wedding.
It's probably his military background.
Say, why haven't you shaved?
You see these shows, and we need to get off this.
Yeah, I know.
These shows with guys in the field, World War II movies, you know, and they're shaving in the field, you know.
Well, we had to do that in officer candidate school.
Had to shave every day?
We had to shave even when we were out in the field for days.
Yeah.
Now, in British Columbia in November, where there's snow and freezing rain, and you're expected to heat up some water to shave, that was persecution.
You could get a Purple Heart out there trying to shave. When I get a chill or something like that, there's no way I could.
However, we found out that the shaving cream that we took with us came in handy when you're trying to light a fire, a bonfire in the rain.
Really?
You pour some shaving cream on there, put a match to that, and away she goes.
Wow.
Are you serious?
There's a little tip for you, folks.
Survival. Out in the wild.
Always bring a can of Barbasol.
Barbasol.
Yeah. We did not ask if it was legal for us to do that, but we did.
Well, real quickly, I got two things that worked there for me as far as excuses, and then we shall move on to the next encouraging story of the day. One is I found, and I'm not saying this is, I'm not proud of this, okay, necessarily, but if somebody looks at me and I got a 4-day, you know, growth, and they look at me and you can tell they're thinking, why haven't you shaven?
Yeah.
You can go with skin condition, which works. That works every time. I just tell them I got a condition.
Yeah.
You know, if they say something, if they're rude enough just to bring it
up.
Rude enough to bring it up. And there are people who are friends of mine who know me well. Why aren't you shaving?
Got a skin condition?
You can go with skin condition. Again, it's, I don't know, is that borderline dishonest or just straight out dishonest?
That's straight out lying.
Okay, anyway.
Unless you've got a skin condition.
Well, it's a white
lie. Then
line.
Your second thing, I think I know what it's going to be. But
the second thing is you can say, I got a church play coming up.
Oh.
Huh?
I thought you were going to say, I did shave this morning.
Right. Well, that you know, that's, you know, a new lie I could
we have,
use
we
right
have
there.
Shan Easterling, who's one of our engineers. And that guy, I believe, could grow a full beard in one day.
By lunch?
Yeah, by lunch.
Which is why he always gets one of the three wise men in the Christmas
That's
play.
Right.
It's a man's man right there. All right, Fred, next story.
All right. I think most of our listeners remember the name Nicholas Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
He is the young man, Covington High School, Kentucky young man, whose face became very well known in this country.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Washington, D.C. for the March for Life and had the encounter with the Native Indian man. And then this first story that came out, we all remember that Nick Sandman was guilty of provoking a confrontation.
And the Covington Catholic boys.
Yeah.
They surrounded this poor little Indian man and and we're trying to
intimidate. Nathan Phillips, by the way, is his name.
Yes. So we also know that in the last couple of weeks that the Salmon family has hired a lawyer. They're going to sue the media outlets. And in fact, the story this morning is that the first lawsuit has been launched, and that is against the Washington Post. They are suing the Washington Post for $250 million, all right, which happens to be the same amount of money that Jeff Bezos paid to buy the Washington Post, the Amazon founder.
Yeah.
So here's what it says. It accuses the Post of practicing, quote, a modern-day form of McCarthyism by targeting Nicholas Salmon and, quote, using its vast financial resources to enter the bully pulpit by publishing a series of false and defamatory print and online articles to smear a young man who was, in its view, an acceptable casualty in their war against the president, end quote. So that's their basis. The Washington Post hates Donald Trump so much that they were willing to fabricate a story about young Nicholas, because remember, Nick was wearing a MAGA hat.
Make America great again.
Make America great again. And so what the lawyers are saying is that their motivation was, we hate Trump, so here's an opportunity to show how nasty Trump followers are. So this is the first of many lawsuits. The diocese, the Catholic diocese, even though it's apologized, is also likely going to be sued because they blamed Nicholas initially.
Didn't their attorney give these media outlets an opportunity to retract within 48 hours?
There was a demand for that.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah, and we are going to talk to Abe when he comes on to talk about the legal ramification and how this goes. But, yes, I think they did, and I think that's generally before you sue someone. I'll need Abe to tell me if this is – I think it's libel if it's written, right? Slander if it's verbal.
Yeah.
But this is what the lawsuit is claiming that the Post, I'm reading from a Fox News story, the Post ignored the truth and then said falsely accused Nicholas, because they said they made –
Nicholas,
of accosting Nathan Phillips by suddenly swarming him in a threatening and physically intimidating manner, blocking Phillips' path, refusing to allow Phillips to retreat, taunting the dispersing indigenous crowd and chanting, build that wall, Trump 2020, go back to Africa. And so it is all lies,
right.
And they're accusing the attorneys.
You're saying, excuse me for interrupting, you're saying this is what the newspaper wrote,
the Washington Post,
about the situation that happened.
Right.
And evidently they didn't ever retract it.
As far as I know, they did not retract it. And so Sandman's attorneys are accusing the Post of publishing 7 false and defamatory articles.
Wow.
And claim that the paper knew and intended that its false and defamatory accusations would be republished by others, including media outlets and others on social media. Because now this guy, I think you mentioned in our story meeting, Tim, that Nicholas Salmon, he's in high school, right? Mm-hmm. High school.
He's a minor.
His face is going to be out there forever on the internet. Can this guy get into college? Can he get a job after this?
Mm-hmm.
This, we'll ask Abe, but it seems to me that if you're going to have libel laws, this is the kind of thing you have them for.
Well, the Washington Post responded saying they will vigorously defend themselves in this. Andrew Napolitano, familiar face if you watch Fox News, attorney from New York City, he believes that the suit doesn't have a chance.
Okay.
He believes it's going to be hard for the Salmon attorneys to prove that what happened in Washington last month is going to have that kind of impact on the future of Nicholas Salmon.
And you've got to be able to prove malice.
Yes.
I think, and intentional misrepresentation of the facts.
I don't know if they issued a retraction of any kind. If they did issue a retraction, then I would say the newspaper's off the hook because journalists make mistakes all the time that have to be corrected in subsequent newspapers, and responsible journalists do that. However, if they didn't, and they let this story go on without a retraction, knowing the truth after the video surfaced where, and the more I saw this, the more this upset me, is that the Nathan Phillips, is that his name?
Nathan Phillips is the American Indian.
This man was a professional protester, okay? It was later learned. 64 years old, and he walks into this, he walks over to this group of boys.
Yes.
Boys. They're teenage boys, goofing off, trying to wait on their bus to get there at the Lincoln Memorial. All the while, these black Israelite, what do they call themselves?
Black, was it Black Hebrew Israelites or something? It's some kind of cultish
group. Or over
group.
Here, there's 5 or 10 of them just hurling all kind of profanities and insults at these boys. And these boys are probably sitting there going, who are these people? And the Black Israelite, whatever they are, they are also hurling insults at Nathan Phillips and his group of Native Americans who are there for their own reasons to protest something or another. But this Nathan Phillips, this 64-year-old, goes up to Nicholas Sandman and his friends and gets right in his, you've seen the video, gets right in his face.
Less than a foot away.
This 64-year-old man thinks it's a good idea. I'll just go over there and get right in this teenage boy's face, and I'll bang my drum. You know, I'll bang my drum right in his face and see if I can't get him to hit me. This is what I think he's thinking. If he's thinking, if I'm a professional protester, this is my moment, okay?
Right.
If I can get this white kid to hit me with the MAGA hat on, I'm set for life.
Right.
Because I'll sue him. Oprah have me on. I'll be on every news show, a book, a movie.
Right.
I'll probably get a band out of this deal to travel. I mean, this is my moment to shine.
Right.
So I'm going to bang this drum right in this little white kid's face and see if I can't get him to react. And to Nicholas's credit,
yeah,
he stood there and smiled.
Yeah,
which was later described as a smirk.
Yeah, his smile was,
he said he was praying.
Provoking. That's what the newspaper, that he was provoking Nathan Phillips.
And he later explained. He said, "I didn't know what to do.
Right.
So I didn't want to scowl at him. Yeah. I didn't want him to think I was
anything. He would have done would have been criticized. So his smile, and he said, "I was praying that trying to defuse the situation." That's what the kid said. I saw his interview.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice kid and doesn't even, I mean, it bless his heart, you know. And we here at AFA have been in touch with the attorney representing him, mm-hmm, and offered $10,000. We're trying to get that to them because this is important
to defend his reputation.
Yes, absolutely. Because what they're trying to do to him can be done to anybody, and they're going after. They're going after Christians, and they're going after conservatives.
Yes.
And this is a way of intimidating.
Intimidating.
I tell you what is unprecedented in all of this is the open hatred of major media outlets in this country against this president. I have never.
Yeah.
Me
never.
Either.
You think back to the years of George W. Bush or his dad or even Ronald Reagan. The media did not behave this way.
No.
They hate Donald Trump.
Sam
they
Donaldson
really
was a fly, a gnat for Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
But they had their sparring.
Yeah.
But it was never really mean-spirited and like it is today. But like I've said before, when Madonna can be on the National Mall and for all the world to say at a resistance rally, there's many times I've thought about going and blowing up the White House. Isn't that what she said?
Yeah.
That White House. And everybody cheers, and that doesn't hurt her career.
Right.
That doesn't hurt her career, and the media lets
free
her get
pass.
A pass, free pass on it. Then you're right, Fred. That shows you how much they hate President Trump and what he stands for.
Yes.
We shall return with Abraham Hamilton III momentarily. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word.
Very famously, Amos 3:3, can two walk together except they be agreed or in agreement? And the answer is no, they really can't. Abraham Lincoln was inspired by that, you know, when he said, "A house divided against itself cannot stand."
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C., we go to the Supreme Court. That's one of the places we go on day one, and we visit the inside chambers. We go to where the justices sit, and it's an amazing place to visit, the Supreme Court of the United States. We don't just look at the outside. We go to the inside and see where the justices sit and where oral arguments are heard. So that's just one of the places we visit on one of the days when Washington, D.C., and we also go to Mount Vernon, the home of George and Martha Washington. So we're going in September. June's full. September will be filling up soon. If you want more information on this Spiritual Heritage Tour, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A nonprofit restaurant learns a lesson about socialism. That story next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Back in 2010, Panera Bread opened a nonprofit restaurant designed to feed low-income people. They called the restaurant Panera Cares. Instead of charging a price for their delicious chicken salad, they let folks pay whatever they wanted. In a nod to socialism, they offered sandwiches for a suggested donation. Now, that seems like a noble thing to do, but in reality, it turned out to be a free lunch. Some diners ponied up the cash, but most did not. Over a span of 9 years, none of the Panera Cares franchises turned a profit, thanks to a mob of homeless people and hungry college kids. Long story short, the last remaining Panera Cares is going out of business, proving the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's chicken salad. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News Commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And we're back. It is Today's Issues. Halfway through the week, folks. Ed Vitagliano, Tim Wildman, Fred Jackson.
What day is it?
Hump day.
I think that camel's back.
He's back, I know.
Why are they doing that? Why are they bringing him back?
Maybe the original commercial. I've seen some old Geico commercials.
I've seen the
squirrels.
Old yeah.
They're coming.
I don't like
that
squirrel commercial.
Because that is real. Where the squirrel goes back and forth in the road.
Yeah, and the car wrecks.
That's
Or maybe it doesn't wreck, but it goes flying up.
That's the real deal when you have squirrels.
I kind of like the camel.
Oh, the camel's pretty good.
Yeah. I like the He's camel. Pretty good.
Mike.
What day is it, Mike? Hump day. We get it.
All right, Abraham Hamilton III. How you doing, Abe?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. Abe is the...
I'm doing just as well as a camel on Wednesday.
Abe is public policy analyst for American Family Association, and also Abe is a constitutional attorney and host of the Hamilton Corner each afternoon here on American Family Radio from 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time. And Abe joins us Wednesdays during this half hour to discuss various and sundry topics with a legal spin, usually, when we're talking about constitutional law. Our question: we were talking last half hour, Abe, about the situation with Nicholas Sandman, the young man from Covington Catholic School, who was in the picture there, that went around the world and called a smirk, and that he was, you know, being condescending of the Native American man, which all turned out to be false, as we know after the video was released. But now he has an attorney that is suing potentially more than one media outlet.
New York Times, CNN, and a few, Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren.
So what he's doing is he's claiming that these, don't get us started down the Pocahontas Road.
No, I say, and the Washington Post.
On the Washington Post. That's, and the Washington Post.
The
I'm
formal
sorry.
Suit has been launched against,
against the Post.
The Post,
yes.
Anyway, so claiming that they defamed, I guess, this young man, who is a minor, and harmed his life, and have... did not retract their inaccuracies slash errors slash intentional mischaracterizations.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read the lawsuit, the wording that the lawyers are using.
I haven't read the petition.
The Post, they're accusing the Post of practicing, quote, a modern-day form of McCarthyism and of using its vast financial resources to enter the bully pulpit by publishing a series of false and defamatory print and online articles to smear a young man who was, in its view, referring to the Post, an acceptable casualty in their war against the president, end quote. Very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. So you want me to respond?
We want to know if this is a winnable case, or has he got no chance, or what?
I think he has a shot, and I'll tell you why. Defamation is the overarching category of a published false statement. Slander is an oral false statement. Libel is a printed or written false statement. One of the reasons why I think he has a shot is public persons are treated completely differently than true private persons. And I can read the basic elements for defamation. It is a statement that is false or defamatory, that is issued with reckless disregard for the truth or falsity of the statement in making the statement. Or this third line only applies to private people. And the statement was made by negligently in failing to ascertain whether the statement was true or false before making it. That last component is something that only applies to private citizens, truly private persons, I'll say it that way. When I say private citizens, I mean non-public figures, non-media personalities and others. And because of him being a truly private person, adding to that him being a minor, I think he has a shot.
I just wanted to read some of the things the original Post article put out there about Nicholas Sammond.
You're talking about the Washington Post.
The Washington Post. Washington
there are Post. Several posts. Yep. New York Post.
Okay. All right. Accused Nicholas, the story, falsely accused Nicholas of accosting Phillips by suddenly swarming him in a threatening and physically intimidating manner, blocking Phillips' path, refusing to allow Phillips to retreat, taunting the dispersing indigenous crowd, and chanting, "Build that wall, Trump 2020, or go back to Africa," and otherwise engaging in racist and improper conduct. Sammond's attorneys accused the Post of publishing seven false and defamatory articles about the incident between January 19th and the 21st.
And so this is going to turn on for him whether or not, and I'll read it right out of here, whether or not the Washington Post acted negligently in failing to ascertain whether the statement was true or false before making it. One of the main pieces of evidence is going to be, well, the videos abounded, and in a matter of, 24 hours, you have an entire video that if you would have taken 15 minutes to watch the additional videos that were made available before making those statements, whether or not that was considered negligence. Negligence, generally speaking, is to say it's an unreasonable deviation from a proper standard of care.
I want to get your opinion, too, related to this, because the overarching political purpose of what the media and celebrities and Twitter people, not all of them, but the vast majority, did with the Nicholas Sandman, the young man from Covington Catholic School, The point they wanted to make with the picture was, this is a picture of President Trump's supporters wearing a MAGA hat, standing over a poor little Indian man like it's white dominance, white Christian dominance of other people, and he's smirking at him like, "I'm better than you, I'm superior." That was a characterization. That's the backlash that Nicholas Sandman received. As we know now, as we've mentioned from the video, that was not the case. As the old saying, you can't judge a book by its cover. Sometimes the book reaffirms the cover, but you have to be careful, and that's a lesson for all of us, quite frankly, not just the Washington Post. But related to that, in the media, again, not all the media, but the vast majority of the media now, intent on destroying President Trump's presidency, his administration, and trying to shame everybody who voted for him. You have this situation with the actor, Jussie Smollett. He's on a Fox Network TV show called Empire. Most of you have heard about this story. And now he is, he claimed to be a victim of an attack by two men who he said were white and were Donald Trump supporters at 2 a.m. in the morning in Chicago when he went out to get a Subway sandwich. Now his whole story is falling apart, as it appears to be a hoax. My question to you is, Abe, having worked in criminal law for a long time, if somebody files a false police report and it turns out that he set this whole thing up, is that what happens with two people who were friends of his, what kind of trouble can you get in?
Well, almost every jurisdiction in the country, there's a crime called false report to a police officer. So you have the reality of his initial presentation of himself as a victim to where he now, depending on the police investigations and the information that's available to us now, has become a suspect in a crime called false report to a police officer. And you think about Chicago, Illinois, the things that are happening criminally there, the amount of man hours, the amount of resources, the amount of things that the police department had dedicated to investigating his criminal allegations. Could those resources could have been reallocated, reused right, to address real crimes in Chicago, Illinois? And quite frankly, there are numerous instances of people being accused falsely and suffering all kinds of negative repercussions because of those false accusations. Where now it turns out the latest reports that the two gentlemen who are of Nigerian ancestry but born and raised in Chicago, they're cooperating with the police and say not only did Jussie Smollett pay them to set up his own attack, but he did it after he created his own threatening letter, sending to himself with magazine letters.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
He had gotten the letter. So these two brothers
have told the Chicago Police Department that he sent that letter to himself. And when the news media refused to report on that, then the hoax, the attack happened. And then the other component of it is that Jussie Smollett acted in a play called Take Me Out, where the main character was a biracial, in-closeted homosexual baseball player who came out and was attacked that same way in the play that he was just in prior to this incident. So this stuff is just unfolding.
Wow. I know you're not a psychologist.
Nor do I play one on TV.
But you did stay at Holiday Inn Express last night. So, you got to ask why a guy like this would do something of this nature, because he's a celebrity.
Yeah.
He's got to be making good money, and he's loved by all of Hollywood and the world. And why would you want to do something like this?
And let me just add this too, that if this turns out to be revealed as a hoax, he's probably done.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, his career is over.
Right.
Well, two things. First, the early speculation was that he was being written out of the Empire show, which Fox, the network, vehemently rebutted. However, it has come to light that he has had a reduction of scenes and screen time going forward, which he and the rest of the cast were aware of. So it could be argued that the effort was, there's no such thing as bad press. All publicity is good publicity, in an attempt to make himself a martyr for the cause, both a homosexual victim as well as being an anti-Trump personality. He thought potentially that by creating this fear about himself, that he would make a demand for himself to remain as a main character on the show. And then on the other end, some people saying that he's done. I'm not so sure. I think that the American public is very forgiving, and you even saw some media personalities who refuse to say that this, what they understand so far, it's a hoax. Some have even said, it doesn't matter if it didn't happen to him. We know it's happening to somebody somewhere in the country. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. I do think he could get on TV. I don't know what the law is going to do to him. There's a lot of Chicago police and detectives who are ticked.
Yeah.
Right now, because they've been put in this position. And now, you know, when they came out and said, when the supporters of Jussie Smollett came out and said the police need to get to the bottom of this after it first happened, they demand justice. I was thinking to myself, be careful what you wish for, because they're going to find out, it's probably going to find out it's a hoax. And first of all, I thought, since he is an openly gay man, I thought this is probably a bad date, you know, that he would maybe got beat up on.
Yeah.
It wasn't that, apparently. It was a play that he scripted out with a couple of his other friends there. So, you know, and you're just, the whole thing was just so bizarre, especially when I heard that he was, after the attack, he was walking up to his apartment with still having his Subway sandwich. I thought, and the quote noose around his neck. I don't know what kind of noose. I thought, that's a little hard to believe right there, my friend. Yeah. I'm going to tell you, you kept your tuna salad sandwich after you finished.
Although I will say, in his defense.
Okay, you say that.
Any decent Italian is going to make sure you come out with the food.
So, okay.
So
that's a proud moment for an Italian. If you get home with the food, even after being attacked.
You come out with that salami sandwich, after being attacked, you fight your way out, and you come out
with the sandwich. You're a legend in your family.
That's right.
All right.
So I will say that in his defense. He doesn't have much of a defense. But, you know,
it was tuna.
Joking about this, because it does deserve scorn, but what this fella tried to do is shameful, because he tried to stir up racial and animus in Chicago. He tried to make people who support and voted for President Trump, by extension, make them all look like they hate homosexuals and are willing to beat them up at 2 a.m.
Yeah, if it turns out that he
thinks it's a hoax.
Yeah,
that would be his motivation. Maybe one, what you've described here, maybe his star was fading and he wanted to be back in the news, and this was a way to do it. And two was to try to smear MAGA.
Yeah.
You know, and people who support it. So
just a couple of things this morning.
Related to this?
Yes.
Okay.
We have,
and then we'll go to our guest here.
Reports this morning that he got in trouble with the law in Los Angeles in 2007. He was pulled over for suspicion of driving under the influence, and he gave the cops his younger brother's name.
Really?
Yeah, so signed his younger brother's name on an affidavit.
Threw his brother under the bus.
Wow.
Threw his brother under the bus. Also, this morning, Chicago's main prosecutor has recused herself from this investigation.
Why would you do that, Abe?
Well, the only reason why you recuse yourself is that either you are personally compromised, you have some type of relationship with the individuals involved that would impede upon your ability to be a neutral arbiter of justice. So
Maybe she's a fan of the show. Huh?
Maybe so. I don't know.
All right, thank you, Abe.
All right, thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, brother. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Well, our next guest is Phil Robertson. Phil is author of the new book, The Theft of America's Soul, subtitled Blowing the Lid Off the Lies That Are Destroying Our Country. Of course, Phil and his family, well known from the Duck Dynasty television series, and he joins us now from, I guess, near West Monroe, Louisiana. Bill, this is Tim. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning to y'all.
Thanks for being on with us. Ed's here and Fred's here as well. Are you in West Monroe today?
West Monroe. I'm down here on the riverbank. I'm looking out. It's quiet. There's no vehicles. There's no people walking around. I have my guard dog sitting on the couch next to me. Life is good. I'm in the woods.
I'm hearing a John Denver song right there. You just described it. Anyway, well, Phil, tell us about your new book, The Theft of America's Soul.
Simply put, the first three chapters, one, the lie that there's no God, two, there's no devil, three, truth is relative. But just looking at those three, if you think about it logically, the truth is, and everyone who is honest will admit this, all have sinned. Sin is breaking the law, one of God's laws. Sin, in fact, is lawlessness. So that's number one. You say, oh, yeah, all men have sinned. And the second problem, besides sinning, by the way, when's the last time you heard anyone in the government, the institutions of higher learning, the education system, the news media, when's the last time you heard someone say the word sin? Just off the top of your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it doesn't exist.
Right.
It's a problem and a big one. And the second problem mankind has, and the truth is, we're all going 6 feet deep one day. It can be car wreck, cancer, heart attack, or old age. But it is a fact. We're all going to die physically, and we've already died when we sin, and we're spiritually dead. You say, Hebrews 6:18 says it's impossible for God to lie. So the reason I framed the book as a series of lies is that twofold. One, God said it's impossible for me to lie. I have a book, it's a Bible in my lap. It's thick. Jesus asked them when they came to him and they said, we believe in you. He said, no, you don't. This is John chapter 8. He said, you belong to your father, the devil, and you're trying to kill me, which they eventually did, and that's how the world was saved. He said, the devil is the father of murder, and he's the father of lies. Well, if you look at it carefully, gentlemen, you say, you know what? There's been, since human beings have been on planet Earth, look at the blood that has been shed because of murder. Look at the wars and all of the interaction from all of the nations on the earth. You come away with a conclusion. You said, man, at the blood that's been shed, when there is no God, the murder rate is always out the roof. Go into every culture since mankind has been here, these empires, they rise and then they fall, they collapse. So when the Apostle Paul wrote to the Roman Empire, he was warning them, if you don't think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, which I'm trying to get people to do in the book, they will be given over to a depraved mind, and they'll do what shouldn't be done. One of the lists is they'll be full of envy, murder, strife, malice, deceit. They're senseless, faithless, heartless, ruthless. That was written 2,000 years ago to the Roman Empire. Fast forward to the American Empire. What's the difference, guys? Sin's a big problem, and we're loaded down with them, and we're all going to physically die. And if there is no God, like they're saying with that lie, none of us are getting out of here alive. I'm waiting on a better story, one that will beat Jesus coming down, God in flesh, dying on a cross to fix that first problem we had, removing our sin, and 3 days later guaranteeing us there's life beyond the grave. Until somebody tops that story, I'm sticking with it.
Amen.
You're listening to the show Today's Issues. That voice you're hearing, if it sounds familiar to you, that's because it belongs to Phil Robertson, who's the founder and co-owner of the Duck Commander Company. You probably saw the very popular reality television series Duck Dynasty. Phil has written a new book, The Theft of America's Soul, Blowing the Lid Off the Lies That Are Destroying Our Country. Phil, I totally agree with what you're saying. The Christian roots and foundations of this country are under siege by people. Do you think it's just as simple as this being rebellion against God? What is the motivation? I mean, we have the greatest country the world has ever seen. Why would anyone want to mess with that recipe?
It's because they underestimate, which is what the book is about, and they believe the lies. They underestimate, I mean, the power of the evil one. Listen to this. Here's the text. The Lord's servant must not quarrel. That's me. I'm one of the Lord's servants. Must not quarrel, must be kind to everyone, able to teach. Those who oppose him, and we have a lot of opposition, you say, how did we get to the point we are now? Y'all just think about it. In our culture, look at the incessant, continual, just the volume, the frequency of just the lies that's coming out of the news media and these institutions of higher learning and Hollywood. You're like, what in the world? It's like the Smollett thing y'all were talking about, the guy who dreams up this thing about being attacked. Mm-hmm. All a lie. Is, you say, they have refined lying to the point to where they underestimate the evil one. Watch. Those who oppose the Lord's servants, the people of Jesus, like me, oh, they ridicule me and they own me all the time. But I just keep going, love them anyway, and move on. He must gently instruct the ones who oppose him. And we've got opposition now, and there was opposition during the days of the Roman Empire. There's been opposition all the way through, led by the forces of the evil one. Those who oppose him, he must gently instruct, leading them to a knowledge of the truth, which they say doesn't exist. There's no absolute truth. The truth is, God's there. He's provided a way for our sins to be removed in his son Jesus and the blood that was shed. He'll raise us from the dead. He'll give us life and immortality, and it's free.
Amen.
They trying to get them to a knowledge of the truth. They'll come to their senses. I'm trying to get America to do this and escape from the trap of the devil who's taken them captive to do his will. The answer to your question, why is it it's like pulling teeth to get people just to repent, turn to God, and just get up in the morning and do good and be good, love God, love your neighbor. I mean, you would think, someone says, do you actually think that will work? I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how hard can it be, guys? Get up in the morning and let people see love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control in your life. How hard mm-hmm. could it be? Mm-hmm. You say, the cosmic struggle between good and evil. God who is good and the evil one who is evil.
Yeah.
The cosmic struggle continues, guys. We're in the midst of it, and you're seeing a great empire that's lost its way and have forgotten the God who brought us, greatest country on earth. And now I'm seeing many in the political realm. They're bringing old Karl Marx, raising him from the dead, and they're going with Karl Marx. Socialism now, we're having to speak out against it.
Hey, Phil, we're out of time, my friend. Thank you so much for this book. It's called The Threat of America's Soul by Phil Robertson. And pick it up at your local bookstore or online. And, Phil, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye. Okay. Sorry, Heather. Yeah.
He's a preacher. He would have preached for a while longer.
That was good stuff right there. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.